now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from Class of the Cults and the Cheese Between, the Woozer B. Dan Hammer's Grade A. I am your host, Jason Jacknetty, and today I am talking about Dario Argento's opera, and I'll get to it right after this.
You are invited to enjoy an evening of terror.
Close your eyes. You'll tear them apart. You'll just have to watch everything.
She is the captive audience. No. Are the unrehearsed players. Oh. Evil is the true star. And no matter how hard you try, you won't be able to close your eyes. Director Dario Argento brings fear.
Don't leave me alone. I'm afraid.
Passion. Obsession.
I can take you wherever I want.
And murder to a perfect pitch. The opera, the final note, is a real killer.
Opera, sometimes known as Terror at the Opera, was released December 19th, 1987. That's in Italy. I don't have numbers exactly on cost. I mean, it's supposedly well over a billion lira. But I know the box office is supposed to be 4.7 billion lira. And your director here is Dario Argento. Now, how you feel about Argento is your prerogative. Some people feel that Argento is the greatest horror director of all time. Some feel that he's one of the worst. So I'm honestly going to be here. I'm betting he falls somewhere in between both of those, because that's where most of the truth tends to lie, is somewhere in the middle. But just like any other horror director, Wes Craven, John Carpenter, whoever you might think is the greatest of all time, not everything they produced was perfect. Some things are better than others. And however you might feel about opera or Argento or his other movies, all of that aside, if you're here listening, I'm hoping you're going to, kind of let me delve into this backstory of how opera got made. And I want to make sure we're very clear, even though I said this is called Opera or Terror at the Opera, this is not to be confused with Dario Argento's Phantom of the Opera starring Julian Sands, which I think was 98. Now, I said this was released in Italy in 87, and some of you are thinking, I don't remember this in America. Yeah, this movie was supposed to come out through Orion in probably 88, because it was 87 into 88 in that range, but Orion dropped it. And then eventually, about 1990 or so, you wind up having a situation where it was dropped into home video, and that's where most people would know it here. Either from the home video release, you know, on VHS back then. Well, it had a very short theatrical run in 90, and then it was eventually come out to home video. Most people know from home video. I didn't first see this movie until it was on DVD years and years later, and then eventually Blu-ray and 4K and the whole nine, right? So as you look at how did this movie even come around? Now, I say our Dario Argento is the director. He's also the writer. He also did the story. He did the production. It's an Argento movie. It's all him. In early 1985... Argento was asked by, I'm going to mess this name up, Sefertorito di Marcata, with the production of Giuseppe Verdi's Rigoletto, which would have been Argento's debut as an actual opera director. This was supposed to be a real opera. Now, the year before this, they had brought in Ken Russell to do a version of, I forgot what it was, it might have, whatever it was, Ken Russell did his Ken Russell thing to it, and he put Nazi stuff, and it was like all these crazy imagery and all this stuff, and they were like, well, we can't have that, because like, that rubbed people the wrong way. So Argento said, okay, no problem, I'll come in and do this, but I'm going to do it my way. And I think they were really hoping for him to do Rigoletto, like exactly like he was supposed to do Rigoletto, but he didn't. So Argento came in and he did his version, which was going to include horrific overtones and gimmicks such as devices in the seat throughout the theater that would shoot voltage of during the thunderbolt scenes or thunderstorm scenes, much like William Castle did back in the day. They obviously didn't approve of these ideas, leading to them eventually backing out the project. Okay, further problems occurred. And then eventually Daria Nicoletto, Nicolodio, and he were arrested on drug possession when they found they had hashish in their home. According to Michel Sauvet, who some of you know him as the director of Cemetery Men, Argento spent 2 years working on the script for opera and noted that early drafts went beyond the limitations of gore, which any country apart from Japan would have found unacceptable. The early drafts of the film were far too long and rather incomplete in certain items. So pre-production started going through, and Argento then learned about his father's passing on April 19th in 1987, after which he suffered from a long illness. So now you're mid-86 or so, when he started doing this, it was announced, and now they're getting into 87. Argento declared that the film would be shot in Toretto Calignano and star Giuliana Di Sio, who was at her peak of popularity in Italy following the release of Let's Hope It's a Girl. Neither of these things actually turned out, and the film was shot at Toretto Rigo in Parma and led to the casting of the Spanish actress Cristina Martial. Sorry, guys, I am god-awful with these. This is what you need Luke for. Luke does all these names. Argento originally had thought about getting Jennifer Connelly, who I can't pronounce that, to come back to the to play the role of Betty in the film, but changed his mind and didn't want a comparison between this and Phenomena from 85. He then had tried to get Mia Sara, the star of Legend, but changed his mind when the fashion designer Giorgio Armani suggested Malaysia. Okay, much of the cast obviously had worked with him before, and then some of them appearing in his production of Zombies, even though he didn't direct Zombies, Demons 2, and then, of course, one of my favorites, Tenebrae. When they started filming this thing, that was the most expensive he had ever done. The budget, I think I said a billion, it's 10 billion lira, I read that wrong. But later they said it was closer to 7. It doesn't matter. It's an insane amount of money to spend on, a movie, with the theater cost itself of over about a billion lira. Initially, it was supposed to be produced, Gottfried Lombardo, the head of Titanus. A corporate split between Titanus and other distributors led to the split in interest back in the film. Backed by a production company from Mario and Vittorio Sacchi Gori, the brothers had the National Television Network, RAI, allowed them to organize pre-sales, and that gave Argento a large budget that he usually worked with. Additional filming took place in Switzerland, with interior shot at the De Palio Studios in Rome. Argento had written the role of Maria, originally for Vanessa Redgrave, who shortly dropped out after getting there because her and Argento just could not get along, leading to Nicolodi being cast in the part and the role in the character being severely reduced. On set, it took about 15 weeks to shoot. It was very arduous on everybody. Marcellus actually received real burns from multiple takes that she needed during the scenes when she was tied to the chair during the burning room. So the thing is this, and many people could attest to this, when you produce, because the play they're doing is Macbeth, and when you produce stage productions of Macbeth, it is considered to be a cursed play. And in fact, saying the name Macbeth of the actual play is supposed to bring bad luck upon the actual production. Why the reality of that? The reality of that is that many times Macbeth costs a lot of money to produce. And what happens is companies would go bankrupt trying to make this make this play happen. And they just never would recover from it. It is ironic, though, that this movie was riddled with problems, including people getting injured during this. One of the main actors getting in a car accident, revealing that, as many people knew, that the actor had AIDS, and that Argento eventually had to keep that very quiet, because if anyone had found out that he had had AIDS, the Italian government would have pulled his funding. There's all kinds of stuff about this movie. And as I said to the guys in the vault, I said, this movie is absolutely insane and yet 100% Argento. And it is at times one of the craziest Argento movies you'll see for some of the things that happen. But then you realize that, like, okay, but that's so him. And the violence in this movie is amped up at times, and to the point where it was never even released in Germany. They wanted to cut 25 minutes out of a movie with 107-minute running time just to get this thing into theaters. That's nuts. 25 minutes. I mean, and I'm thinking to myself, going, if you cut 25 minutes out, you're cutting out all the best stuff in the movie, and then what would you have? It would just be about an opera. We've seen those movies. They don't do well. So, and I do say this is very, very, very violent. It is violent. It wouldn't be until probably Robert Englund's Phantom of the Opera where you'd have a Phantom of the Opera take that was as violent as this. Although, and I do like the Robert Englund one, very different kind of movie. So I've jibber-jabbered enough about all that kind of stuff. Let's get to the plot here. So prima donna, Maria Savico, storms out of the dress rehearsal from Verdi's Macbeth at the Parma Opera House, aggravated by the live ravens and by director Marco, known for his horror movies. A little on the nose, but it's what it is. Where am I? Maria is injured by a passing car, and the role of Lady Macbeth is given to her her understudy, Betty, whose deceased mother was also an opera singer. After reassurances from her agent Mira, Marco, and her stage manager boyfriend Stefano, Betty's performance is successful. Meanwhile, a stagehand has discovered an intruder watching the opera from the balcony box reserved for personnel and is murdered against a coat hook. Well, this also leads to the scene where the lighting thing drops down into the play, and there is a lot of opera in this thing, but the problem is the opera is there to kind of help set along this, but it is 100%. There's some debate whether this is really a giallo movie. It does have the black gloves and all this stuff. It has a lot of giallo tropes, but I'm not sure how much this is a true giallo compared to some of other giallos we would get from Argento throughout the years. Anyway, Betty receives a poison pen letter from the resentful Maria. That night, a masked figure breaks into the opera house and slashes Betty's costume to sew a gold bracelet into it. The figure is attacked by ravens and kills three of them. Betty spends the night with Stefano at his wealthy uncle's unoccupied residence. Stefano is sympathetic towards Betty's sexual dysfunction, put it that way, and goes to make tea. Suddenly, a masked figure gags Betty, binds her, tapes needles under her eyes, and forces her to watch Stefano being stabbed to death. Now, the needles under the eyes, this plays a couple times back. Argento had thought of this because he hated when people would turn away from the violence in his movies. And he said, I would like to just put needles under their eyes and make them must watch it. And this comes up several times in the whole thing. Where are we here? Force her to watch. The killer gropes Betty and claims that she is now aroused and then loosens her bonds and flees. Betty reports the murder to the police from a nearby payphone. I mean, she steps over the dead body. She has got... There's all kinds of stuff going on here where Betty is just... And the actress who's playing Betty, who is Christina Mascheron, she did very, very little outside of this. She only did a couple of movies, I think, and she was out of the business within a couple of years. Where am I here? Okay. Reports the murder from a... Marco drives her home, where she describes the ordeal and says that the masked killer resembles a figure in her childhood nightmares. And we do have a bunch of flashbacks here to her mother and her mother's demise and what appears to be like rape scenes and stuff like that. So this is a different, I know on Bots, Bugs, and Babes, sometimes we don't cover these kind of movies, but this movie has that stuff in it. It's not overt. There's not like a ton of nudity, not a ton of crazy. It's a lot of violence, but be as it may. Inspector Alan Santini questions the opera staff about Stefano's murder and the raven attacks. Betty later meets with seamstress Juliana to mend her costume. The killer reappears and constrains Betty in the same manner as before, with the things under her eyes, and then stabs Juliana, who swallows the bracelet. Now, hang on one text there. This scene is crazy. Like, Juliana's fighting him. They got scissors. There's all kinds of stuff. This is the violence that Argento brings to movies and to the screen that most people, it's not necessarily everyone's cup of tea, but most people would associate with Argento nonetheless. The killer then cuts her throat to retrieve it by loosening, he cuts open Juliana's throat to retrieve the bracelet. Why? I don't know why this is in the movie. It's effective, but it's like we could have done any other number of things. But I think we also have never seen this. So that's Argento pushing that envelope, trying to get you something you've never seen. The killer retrieves it before loosening Betty's bonds and fleeing. Santini promises to send Betty his assistant, Danielle Sauvé, for her protection. Betty admits a man that she presumes is Sauvé in her apartment. Mira arrives and says she spoke to a different man claiming to be Sauvé in the lobby. Betty and Mira hide while the figure claiming to be Sauvé takes a phone call and exits the apartment. Not long afterwards, someone claiming to be Sauvé requests entry. As Mira uses the peephole to verify his identity, the figure fatally shoots her right through the peephole. This is a great scene. The bullet goes right down the peephole and tears the back of her head out. I mean, it's all fake, folks. I get it. But it was like a really well done scene. But you see the bullet going down the chamber. It's just really down the chamber of the people. Shooter. Betty hides as the killer breaks into the apartment. She discovers the real mortally wounded Sauvé, who re-entered the apartment and was stabbed by the killer, and escapes through the ventilation staff with the help of the little neighbor girl. Betty meets with Marco. So they're being chased through the ventilation staff, and the mother, the little girl's mother, doesn't want her there, and she's abusive and mean. There's a lot of, like, I don't know. There's not anybody you root for in this entire movie. I wish I could say that, but I felt I wasn't rooting for anybody here. I'm more rooting for the ravens, or, you know, than anything else. But that's another story. Betty meets with Marco, who has a plan to identify the killer during the performance. Betty has a recurring nightmare in which she discovers her mother's bound in a dilapidated room, smiling at her reflection while a woman screams that falls silent. After which, Betty glimpses the masked figure. During the following night's performance, Marco unleashes the ravens into the audience. Now, this is real. Ravens can identify somebody who has done them wrong, or they have a grudge against, kind of thing. And if you've injured some of them from their flock or murder, whatever you call crows are a murder. I think it's ravens are also a murder, right? They will recognize you and they will attack you. So recognizing their attacker, Santini, the birds gouge out one of his eyes. Santini shoots at Betty and flees, and then later abducts her from her dressing room. Santini reveals that he was enamored of Betty's mother, who had him tortured and murder young women for her gratification. So Betty's mother was also part of the crazy thing. So that's the whole thing. She had people tortured and murdered. Not everyone kind of saw that twist coming, but as a twist. Young Betty partially witnessed one such murder, which haunts her nightmares, though we understand them. So, Santini eventually killed Betty's mother due to her escalating demands and refusal to have sex with him. Betty's resemblance to her mother revived Santini's bloodlust. Santini blindfolds Betty, binds her to a chair, and stages his suicide by setting the room on fire. Betty breaks free and escapes. And this is what we talked about, where she got some of the burns from this thing. So at this point, she escapes. And you're thinking like, okay, this has got to be the end of this movie. Betty and Marco withdraw to Marco's house in the Swiss Alps. And you're like, oh, the hills are alive with the sound of music here, right? Marco sees a news broadcast indicating that a mannequin, not Santini, was burned in the fire and that a manhunt is underway for Santini. So this is another twist. Now you're like, wait a minute. Really? Okay. He discovers that his housekeeper has been murdered and shouts for Betty to flee. Betty runs from the house, pursued by Santini. Marco tackles him, only to be stabbed to death. Betty bashes Santini on the head with a rock and the police arrest him as Betty declares that she is nothing like her mother. Betty finds a lizard trapped in the foliage and sets it free, and then she becomes one with nature, yada, yada, yada. Now, there is an alternate ending, or there was a proposed alternate, I shouldn't say there is. There was a proposed alternate ending, and the proposed alternate ending was this, was that once Santini shows up to the Swiss Alps there and kills Marco, Betty thinks that she now is exactly like her mother and is now fallen in love with Santini, and they run off together and they never get caught. What, like, I mean, that would be pretty nuts and a little much for an Argento ending there, although this one's pretty nuts too. But that's what winds up happening. You wind up having the Hills Have Eyes meet Psycho in the Swiss Alps here. This movie is kind of, you know, bonkers at times. And it does have, let's say, but I mean, there are some people who love this movie and there are some people who absolutely detest it. And that's fine. You're welcome to have your opinion. The hard part about this is that even though it never came out initial release there, this movie has been released in so many different cuts. It's unbelievable. So when it was released, obviously, over in Italy, the film initially was going to be released in the United States, and Orion thought about truncating cut, eliminating 30 minutes of footage, including the ending in the Swiss Alps. So I'm not sure how they were going to end this, but what the other cuts would be. 30 minutes of cuts. I mean, that's like Germany, 25 minutes of cuts. It seems crazy. They scrapped the theatrical release from theaters, and they failed to find a theatrical release in the UK. Okay, so then what wound up happening was it started premiering in Long Island in 1990 and then in small regional things in Montana and Texas, and it wound up playing these little film festivals. So what happened was it was released in Australia, on home video in Australia, Japan, and the United States, and the UK as Terror of at the Opera. Then eventually, the one I was talking about, Anchor Bay, a limited number multi-disc DVD set, that the film score, this is back in 2001. So I had this when I was in grad school. It was a big thing to get this. The standard edition was issued later and after a recall of the former edition due to defective disc of some pressings. Now, I had to do the same thing. Send it in. They had to mail it to me. In 2018, Scorpion released the Blu-ray in the U.S. A deluxe collector's edition Blu-ray was released in 2019. In 2024, Severin Films released the limited 5-disc set, including a 4K ultra high def and the Blu-ray editions. I have the 4K restoration on Blu-ray because it was far cheaper to buy that than the 4K at the time. Eventually, I might change it. Who knows? Now, the reviews of this movie kind of hit all over the place. Some people said they denounced it for its violence. Some loved it for being a different take on a Phantom of the Opera idea, but not truly being the Phantom of the Opera. Some people felt that the story was unique. Some people felt that it was just pieced together to get from gore scene to gore scene. The one thing I can say about Argento, whether you love him or not, is that people talk about his movies when they see him. Even if it's a movie that you don't enjoy. Like, I don't love Inferno that much. That's not one of my favorite Argento movies. I honestly don't love all of Deep Red either, but that's a different story. Kind of thing. There's good, really good parts in Deep Red, but I much more prefer Tenebrae and the Stendhal Syndrome are probably my two favorites he's made. Whereas some people would say, oh, it's Deep Red and Suspiria. Like, Suspiria's got some really good stuff in it, but Suspiria is like, okay. Like, but I like Suspiria better than I like, I just blanked on it, the other one. I totally blanked on the name, sorry. But then you go and watch, what they called it, Creepers, but it's Phenomena. That's a different kind of take. Argento is definitely acquired, Inferno is the other one. And then it comes Mother of Tears. And his newer stuff is weird at times, but, not quite there. You make your own choices on that, but it's definitely, got its place. Anyway, so overall, most critics, the ones who liked it, really liked it. The ones who hated it, buried it. But what it is, it's very much an Argento take. And if you are, again, if you like his kind of movies and the critics who like his kind of movies, they probably ate this up with a spoon. For those who kind of, criticize the violence of the whole thing, I don't know if anything he produced was going to be okay for them. Honestly, this is a movie I've seen several times. I watched it for this watch sitting. I have the 4K restoration, but I actually wound up watching the Joe Bob Briggs Last Drive-In, which has got some really cool backstories and stuff in there as well. If you get a chance to check that out, it's worth it. But that's, where we are. I mean, and opera is an interesting movie that I'm sure some of us have seen. And if you haven't seen it, it's, worth the time and effort to watch if you are okay with this, that kind of violence and stuff. It's not a movie that, Kelly would want to watch. I mean, although Kelly did watch the Phantom of the Opera, the one with Julian Sands. We watched that when we first, we weren't even married yet. We were just engaged. And we watched that here at we first bought our place, and we were here painting one day, and I put it on. We watched it. Did you see opera? Obviously, I don't know if anyone's at any of those film festivals, small film festivals in the 90s. Were you there? That'd be cool. Did you discover this on DVD? Did you discover this? Were you part of that system? We had to send them back and get new discs and stuff like that. Love to hear from you folks. So, hopefully you guys enjoyed this. Hopefully, you're enjoying the content. I know I'm kind of all over the map with things and not leading you guys as well into what's coming up, because I don't always know what's coming up. So, but thank you those who have stuck with us and through all the craziness, and thank you for those for your support. Right? All of us at True True Freaks truly appreciate all the listens and downloads, because this is a labor of love. None of us are making a dime off of doing this, and we totally appreciate you guys supporting us. So that about wraps it up for me for opera. Again, feedback is always welcome. So, like we say here, keep those cards and letters coming, and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman, or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at twotruefreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at botsbugsbabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram, find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?